the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering, of course, the Arizona Cardinals, the team that you love to follow. And this is our third show of the week. It's episode 476. It is Seahawks week, week 7, and this is our opponent. This is not our opponent year preview, but it's a week. Week 7 Seahawks preview with the enemy. And so we have a special guest for you guys. It is Tim Weaver, managing editor of the Seahawks Wire over part of the USA Today. Tim is you should know Tim, as he's been on for our season opponent previews a couple of times. And also, I believe he came on once for when he was covering one of the NFC. I think, was it the Panthers you were on a couple 3 years ago for?
Yeah, Carolina.
Yeah, so we've had Tim. We've talked about Tim about the Panthers. We've talked to him about the Seahawks. But this is definitely about the Seahawks. Tim, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you taking the time. How have you been?
No problem. Thanks for having me. I'm doing good.
So we look ahead, the Cardinals and the Seahawks. This is a stretch for the Cardinals where it's their third divisional road game in 4 weeks. Their divisional road schedule is done after this week. Seattle had the bye week. I look at the Seahawks and I see a somewhat puzzling team because their wins are good, but their losses aren't so good. They look like they have a great defense and they look like their defense isn't great. And then I look at the two games, like defensively in particular, their yardage allowed has decreased every game and they look like, you know, elite. But you have to take that with a grain of salt over the last two games because they held the Giants to almost nothing and they held the Bengals to almost nothing. And the truth is the Bengals and the Giants haven't looked good this season except for two quarters against the Cardinals for the Giants and four quarters versus the Cardinals when it comes to their offense. What can you tell us about this Seahawks team defensively? What exactly are they this year?
Well, it's like you said, it's a bit of a mixed bag. There's an obscene amount of talent, especially on the back end. They're paying more than any other team, like 50% more than any other team in safety, so they better be good there. Jamal Adams is back. He looks like he's himself again. Quandre Diggs is playing well as usual. They have Julian Love as a third safety now. He's always good. The cornerbacks are just ridiculous. Everyone is very excited about Tariq Woolen and obviously Devin Witherspoon, the number 5 overall pick coming in. But Trey Brown has been the guy that's making big plays this year. They have three really good cornerbacks. Like, how many teams can say that? It's a very rare thing. And they have some good backups, too. And linebacker Bobby Wagner is incredible. He's got Jordan Brooks playing well, which is a first in his career. They're loaded all over, but they can't seem to get all the pieces together on any one given day. Either the offense is on and the defense is off, or like the run is going or the pass isn't. There hasn't been one complete game yet, which is why it's hard to get a handle on both the defense and the team in a larger sense.
I will say this though, the way that they went out and made it a point to be better against the run, I think that's the one thing we can say, right? That the run defense is infinitely better than it was a season ago, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's a total opposite. They went from being the third worst in the league to the third best. I'm not sure if they're still third. They're up there. I believe only three teams are allowing fewer yards per game on the ground. And that's yes, it's personnel. It's Bobby Wagner. It's Jaron Reed coming back and both doing that very well against the run. But they're also doing schematic things. So it's several things at once. But yes, that is the one definite. They are much, 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 much better against the run this year than they were last year.
And so you're getting sacks. They got 19 sacks, but 10 different players have their 19 sacks. Are they getting it from Boye Mafe and Jaron Reed? They both have, I think, 3 sacks each. And then you got a bunch of guys with 2. Is there one particular guy that's winning in the pass rush, or is it a combined team effort? How are they getting their sacks? Is it through good coverage? Is it through guys winning one-on-one? Is it a combination of the two?
I don't think it's any one guy. Now, Mafe is in the backfield a lot. He's getting a lot of pressures, but, like, there's no, like, superstar standout pass rusher, and that's been the case for several years. That's why I'm leaning towards I would love to see them try to get Brian Burns. I feel like I've been saying that for 3 years now, but I would love to get them to get Brian Burns or, like, a pass rusher on that level. So maybe someone take a chance on Chase Young, maybe, you know. It's a team effort. I would say more than anything, they feasted on two really bad offensive lines, the Giants and the Panthers. I think the Giants were definitely missing some people, and they just, like, went to town. Otherwise, it's been kind of average. For the Bengals, they got to Burrow for 3 sacks and 5 hits. Not too bad. Like, the first couple weeks of the season, it was just there was nothing. They weren't blitzing, so they weren't getting any pressure at all. So it's been this very up and down. I still don't know what to make of the pass rush because there's been no consistency from week to week.
We go to the offensive side of the ball. Where are we at with Geno Smith? He started out last year as an absolute revelation, looking like an MVP. Now, he was the comeback player of the year. His play declined a little bit late. This year, he's not been bad. In terms of touchdowns, he is producing at a much lower rate, closer to what he did for early in his career. What is kind of the state of Geno Smith in terms of where you view him among starting quarterbacks based on what he's doing this year so far?
I would say Geno's still playing pretty well. While his numbers are down, it's also like all quarterback numbers are down. This is something we've seen across the league. Defenses are generally getting smarter is the short version of it. They're especially in the red zone, as both teams are struggling coming in this week. They're tied at like 50% touchdown rate. But everyone's offensive numbers are down, so you have to lower your bar. Even Patrick Mahomes, you see his numbers are almost human. That's just a function of I think defense is taking away the deep ball more than anything. And that was Geno Smith's best thing last year. He was probably the best deep ball passer in the league. And defense, and it's not just one team, everything, all teams are taking that away now, so you've got to make adjustments. And considering that the bar is lower now, I think Geno's still playing pretty well. In the second half, in the fourth quarter against the Bengals, he was rattled for the first time this season. He's been very calm, very cool. He's been avoiding turnovers in general, but after the second interception, which wasn't even his fault, DK Metcalf actually took responsibility. He said he cut off his route. It wasn't his fault, but he just seemed kind of rattled after that. But other than that one quarter, Smith has been playing pretty well this season.
Talent at the skill position is undeniable. Ken Walker. I'm really bummed that, well, I was bummed when the Seahawks drafted, but I'm a big fan of Zach Charbonnet out of UCLA, and I know it looks like I don't know if the injury report came out quite yet. We're recording on a Friday afternoon, and as of when we started recording, the injury report had not come out, but it didn't look like Charbonnet was going to be able to play. Ken Walker, very good. Then the receiving core that y'all have, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, so good. And then you add Jaxon Smith-Njigba. How has the rookie been so far, and what is it this year, and should they be doing more, or is that to come?
He hasn't really gotten involved yet, and that's one of my many criticisms of offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. He started to come alive last week. I think he got 4 catches, around 48 yards, which is better than it has been. Prior to that, everything he was targeted was near the line of scrimmage. And for 3 years running now, this has been the worst team in the league at screen passes. And anything they throw at or near the line of scrimmage is just going to be a disaster. So he just really hasn't had a fair opportunity to get involved offensively. I would like to see more of him. But on the other hand, the Seahawks are also really, really good in 12 personnel. They're very productive with their tight end. So like, there's a trade-off there. You want to take advantage of your first round draft pick and get 3 receivers out there, but you're also the best team in the league at 12 personnel. So I don't know. You have to find some kind of balance there, but I'd like to integrate him and also keep the tight ends involved if at all possible.
DK is he starting to reach a point in his career where the physical play, the athleticism is starting to take a step back? I know there was a piece written, was it the Seattle Times, about his penalties. And how it doesn't sound like he's too terribly concerned. He's one of the most penalized receiver in the league, and a lot of those are 15 yarders. And he doesn't seem to think, though at least what he says, publicly that it matters a whole lot. He has been banged up for, it seems like, the last couple of years, right? And it seems a little bit like how much can he be? Because it's been, let me pull that up. So it's been, he had a 1,000-yard season last year. But and now his yards per catch is back up to the 15-plus, which is where it was at the first couple of years. But are we starting to see perhaps a slight decline from DK, or is whether it's just because his body is – what's your take on that? I don't want to overstep what it is, but that's kind of the, from the outside, you see a guy that looked his first couple of years like absolutely unstoppable. I know the 2021 he was banged up even though he played in every game. Then last year he played in every game, and he was still, but, you know, only 6 touchdowns, 11.6 yards per reception. Is he still the impact player? Like, it looked like Calvin Johnson numbers, and now he's good, but he's not, definitely not Calvin Johnson.
Right. Well, if you see him on the field, like, he always looks good when he's making catches, when he's actually out there. He looks as potent as he's ever been. I think the numbers are partially a function of him playing hurt. He's got rib and hip injuries going on right now, and we're not sure if he's going to play against Arizona on Sunday. So part of it is just, like, he's always playing hurt just because it's kind of like, you know, like Shaq in the NBA, he was always getting banged up. So, like, he was never 100%, but he'll just usually play through it because he's so much bigger. And I don't know, he's still able to physically dominate most DBs. He dominated Jalen Ramsey here every time they played. Like, how many guys can say that? But the numbers are down. I think there's several reasons for that. Again, that's Waldron. But there's also just so many mouths to feed. They have, like, you've got three – with Bobo now, you have 4 good receivers. You have 3 good tight ends. You have 2 good running backs. You just have – there's a lot of mouths to feed. It's hard to get everybody involved. But I'm not terribly worried about his performance falling off yet. Maybe if he laid off the candy, just a tiny, maybe 2 bags of candy instead of 3 for dinner, you know, just small changes like that would help. But I don't know. I'm not terribly worried at this point.
So let's talk about some of the other stuff. Some newcomers, rookies and newcomers. Who are the ones that are making it? Like, obviously, Bobby Wagner is sort of a newcomer because, you know, they released him. He played a year for the Rams, and now he's back in Seattle, and he's making a difference. Who are the impact additions both in free agency, and what are you all getting out of the rookie class so far? You've talked a little bit about Jackson Smith and Jigba a little bit, but are they getting other impact, any contributions from newcomers, either rookies or veterans?
Yeah, the free agents are mostly 3 guys for the defensive front 7, which was their focus the entire offseason. Bobby Wagner and his presence overall has dramatically improved the defense. You can see just everyone. Communication is better. Everything across the board is just tighter. But Jaron Reed has just, he's been playing out of his mind. He looks like a completely different player. This is like his 7th or 8th year in the league. It's just, it's very rare to see a player, especially like he's playing nose tackle, to just jump off tape the way that he does at his age. And Draymond Jones, he started a little bit quiet, but then he's been coming along. I believe he has a couple sacks in the last 2 games. Those 3 guys, those were their 3 big items in free agency, what they spent the most money on. And so far it's working. The numbers aren't there every week. There's still a little bit of inconsistency, but like they are playing well as far as free agency goes. But the new guys, everything is about Devin Witherspoon. This guy is freaking bananas and nuts. Like for a rookie to play a cornerback rookie to play this well in 4 games is something that I don't know I've seen.
And being like, used a lot of different ways, because he's also one of the team leaders. He's got 2 sacks as well.
Right. He's a great pass rusher from the slot. He's very, very physical as a tackler. He looks, and he reminds me a lot more of people have brought up Troy Polamalu. But it's like he's not quite as big as Cam Chancellor. Nobody's quite as intimidating, but he's got a little bit of that Bam Bam in him. Just a very, very willing physical tackler, which is rare for somebody at his position, and extremely smooth in coverage. He wasn't shadowing Jamar Chase, but on those chances last week when he was matched up on him, he shut him down. There was nowhere for him to go. Very little separation. So just across the board, against the run, rushing faster in coverage, and making plays, he's creating turnovers too. I can't say enough for him to be this good for four games. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Where does he play principally? Does he play more the boundary or inside?
They're playing both, but more it's been inside. Even though he played no slot in college, they like Trey Brown and Woolen at the boundary position, so mostly see him in the slot, but they'll move him outside a little bit as well.
Okay. All right. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the Pacific Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and talk about matchups, types of things. What's Seattle going to try to do against Arizona? What are key matchups that we're looking at? That's coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the Pacific Cardinals talk on the web, talking to Tim Weaver from the Seahawks Wire, managing editor over there, talking about the Seahawks who play the Cardinals this week in Seattle, week 7. Let's kind of look. What do you see the Seahawks trying to do with the Cardinals coming into Seattle this week? What's kind of going to be their game plan? And is there anything? I do not believe that Kyler Murray will be activated this week, but I could see a scenario where he's activated to play a series or two. I'd love to see it personally, but I don't think it will. This game is going to be hard for the Cardinals because they keep losing guys, but what is kind of the goal? What do you see Seattle trying to do to match up against the Cardinals and just take care of business?
I think they'll try to dominate them on the ground. This is something that's been kind of an issue. They've only had one game where they really ran over their opponent. Walker had 97 yards and 2 touchdowns. But other than that, it's just been a below average run game, which is unusual for this team. This is obviously something that Pete Carroll prioritizes a great bit. But Ken Walker looks fantastic. It's not his fault that the numbers are down. A couple weeks ago, he was leading the league in forced missed tackles on runs. He's just extremely elusive and explosive, and he's much more patient this year than he was as a rookie. I can't say enough about how good he looks. But maybe it's a combination of the blocking hasn't been there because they're missing a lot of guys up front. Abe Lucas, the right tackle, is probably their best run blocker. He's been out since week one. They just have a lot of injuries up front in general. Like the backups have done a pretty decent job altogether, with the exception of Jake Curran at right tackle. The blocking hasn't been there, and maybe I'm the only guy who thinks this. I just don't like the run calls more often than not. If they had a more creative run game, like they don't have, you know, I would love to have an offense like Ben Johnson is running in Detroit, or the creative runs they do in Baltimore, but that's just, it's not in the cards for a Pete Carroll team. It's just not something that they do. They like to run between the tackles. They like to be, we're bigger and dumber and meaner than you, and we're going to run over you downhill. There's not a lot of misdirection going on there. If they mix that up a little bit more, I think it would open things up. But that's a little over my pay grade, saying specifically they need to try these run plays. You know, I don't know exactly what would work, but something different would be a good place to start, I think.
Are they a team that will attempt, or do they use the blitz much? Do they get home with four? What's kind of their philosophical take defensively?
For years, it's been they rush four no matter what. And when they were 10 years ago, when they didn't need to, they would get pressure if they rushed two. It didn't matter. Now they need to blitz in order to do it. The first 2 weeks, there was no pressure, pretty much the same story as last year, just very, very little pressure, no hits at all, I believe, the first week. They started blitzing in week 3, and obviously part of that is playing a poor offensive line and taking advantage of that, but they blitzed again a lot in week 4. That's just a huge, huge departure from what they've done. No matter who the defensive coordinator has been under Carroll, they blitz very little, but they seem to be willing to do that more. It didn't work against Joe Burrow, but that's kind of predictable. That's what he does. He'll just throw right at wherever you're blitzing him from. It was not effective that much, but now they are. I'm glad they are embracing the blitz more, and it's not so much just a standard four-man rush.
As we look at matchups, is there an area that you think that Seattle is significantly better at a particular matchup? And if there is one, what do you think is the Seahawks' weakness matchup in this weekend, facing whatever the Cardinals have to offer?
Yeah, I would say this is true most weeks, but their wide receivers against Arizona's DBs. I had to look up who your cornerbacks are. I wasn't even sure. Usually I at least have some idea of what's going on with the division rivals. Like, this is
it's
deep.
Marco Wilson,
really bad.
Keytrell Clark, and well, if everyone's healthy, you've got Marco Wilson and Keytrell Clark on the outside, Kitro, who's a rookie out of fifth rounder out of Louisville. And then you've got this year Jalen Thompson, safety, is playing in the slot as their main slot defender, but Thompson's probably out this week. And Hamilton, who would be the backup slot, probably out this week. So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to look. Marco's healthy. Kitro been limited this week. I'm pretty sure he plays. And I don't know who's going to play in the slot, whether they use Starling Thomas, undrafted rookie Starling Thomas, to play the boundary and slide Kitrell in. So, yeah, I don't know. We don't know yet because of the injuries.
It's not going to be great, most likely. And, like, they're getting better. It's not just Metcalf and Lockett now. Like, Jackson Smith and Jigba is due for a breakout game, and Jake Bobo is adding little splash plays here and there every week. It's just across the board. Like, they don't quite have Cincinnati superpower at wide receiver, but I can't think of anyone else who's better or deeper at the position right now. As far as their weakest point, that's the pass protection. Specifically, I mentioned right tackle. Jake Curran has been there. I don't know if Jason Peters can play. He's got a thing. Everyone is injured for the offensive.
Yeah, I noticed that. Everyone on the offensive. So it looked like Cross is limited. Damian Luce is limited. So it looked like, I would guess, are those guys going to play? But Evan Brown and Phil Haynes and Curran was trending upward, but it looks like probably Haynes and Brown would be out. Who would be in the game if they're out?
Alu-Aluatimi, the rookie out of Michigan. He did very, very well against the Giants, and usually Giants is nothing, but the one thing they're good at is that interior defensive line. He stood up Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams. He did an excellent job. Pistol shutout and pass protection. He's been great when he's out there. But yeah, the big question mark is right tackle. I don't know if they move Zaven Collins around, if he's lined up over left tackle or right tackle, but
move around. In fact, that right tackle position, they've been getting a lot of production out of. So Collins has got 2.5 sacks. Dennis Gardeck's got 4 sacks. And Victor Dimakaji's got 3 sacks. And a lot of that has come from the right side, especially with Gardeck.
Yeah, they're very vulnerable. It feels like Geno Smith has just been – he's been very good at avoiding sacks this year. I think he's, like, top 3 there's a nice avoidance sack stat that I found. He's right up there. He's been very good at avoiding pressures, keeping his eyes downfield kind of thing. But it's become a little bit too much the last couple of weeks. Just he doesn't have anywhere to run. So that's the one Achilles heel they have right now. If they can really exploit that and – get to him the way the Bengals did in the second half, then they might have a chance at an upset.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Seared podcast, episode of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on to the segment predictions and of the sort. That's coming up next on the Rise Up Seared. We're back on the Rise Up Seared podcast, episode of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk picks and predictions. If you had to pick who's going to have the stand-up performances on both sides of the ball, who do you think, if you had to predict that right now, who would that be?
I'm always going to pick Tyler Lockett against the Cardinals. I feel like he's had at least 3 or 4 games where he just goes off. Like, it's not every time, you know, it's not like a consistent, you can rely on him for 75 yards and touchdown, but he might go off for like 200 yards and 3 touchdowns. So like, I'm going to pick him. I'm going to say this is a Lockett week, especially because the cornerback situation is rough.
Yes. Now, I will say this. If you've paid attention over the last few games, the Cardinals have been getting up big numbers. They gave up 7 for 148 and a touchdown to Cooper Kupp, 158 yards and a touchdown and rushing to Kyren Williams. The previous week, Jamar Chase, 15 catches, 192 yards and 3 touchdowns. Joe Mixon had 80 yards. San Francisco, Christian McCaffrey scored 4 times, had 179 total yards. Brandon Ayuk caught 6 passes for 148. Tony Pollard ran for 122 against him. The Cardinals have been a fantasy boon for opposing players this year. And, yeah, I totally see. I can see Tyler Lockett having a big game, especially if I had to pick one. I actually, with DK Metcalf, I really kind of like Marco Wilson against him. I think he's that's the type of matchup that he kind of thrives a little bit more. He did get roasted really bad. Like, he looked bad against Jamar Chase, really, really bad against Jamar Chase. So maybe he steps up a bit and plays DK a little bit better. But the second, offensively, The Cardinals, and I mentioned this in the written part, the Cardinals have been outscored 98-30 this year in the second half of games. The Cardinals have not scored more than 8 points in a single second half. And they've given up 17 points or more three times in a second half of games. And that's kind of how I see this going. If you had to pick a guy who would have a big impact, like if you had to pick someone for the Cardinals to have a big game, who do you think that would be? If there's anyone that's going to have a big game.
Well, there's not much to pick from, is there? You got Buddha Baker's out. You got James Conner out. Kyler Murray's out.
I think Buddha will be back. James Conner's on IR. Kyler's not going to play. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I have to pick Zaven Collins. Like, he's looked good against them the last couple of years. I know they've won three in a row, but that's the one guy who I think has been the most disruptive in the last few matchups. They move him around a little bit. And even if he's just over left tackle, Charles Cross isn't 100% yet. Like, I don't think they rushed him back, but I also don't think he's 100% yet. So there's vulnerability on that side as well.
Yeah, I think that now this comes down to Josh Dobbs. As good as the coverage is, Hollywood Brown, he's been cooking everybody this year. Now, the only reason why he doesn't have big numbers is because Josh Dobbs, frankly, just can't get him the ball. He's been wide open. He's been behind defenses so many times this year, and Dobbs just missed him. So I see this as a potential breakout game for Hollywood. I don't know if it'll mean anything for the game, but I think that they'll be productive early. The Cardinals are very good in the first half, which is why I picked them for our best bets for Week 7 for every team. And that was the Cardinals' money line in the first half because they are 4-2 in the first half. They've had the lead in four of their six games at halftime and just fallen apart after that. You predicted a gross game, didn't you, for the behind the lines? For the what you gave. So explain, how do you think this goes down? Spoiler, he picking the Seahawks just like I'm picking the Seahawks, but he doesn't have the faith in the Seahawks that I do.
Yeah, I feel like this happens at least several times a year where I'm more down on the Seahawks than the other editor is. But I don't know, I just think maybe I'm being influenced. I'm seeing all these defensive numbers scoring down across the league and red zone specifically for these teams. And our third down numbers are just atrocious. I believe they're 31st in the third down thing. That's another thing that's been going on for longer than this year. Just several ongoing problems offensively that don't make any sense given the level of talent that they have. It's just, you have a good quarterback, they're just loaded across at practically every position, and they're not performing in the red zone or on third down. So there's that, and I just think, like, it's going in the wrong direction. There's too many injuries for the offensive line. I'm just feeling a low scoring game. Maybe it'll rain. I haven't looked at the weather report yet.
It is Seattle. It makes
feel
sense.
Appropriate. Yeah. Rainy, low scoring, lots of punts, lots of injuries, just a gross game. I think 18-17 is the final score. I think they played like a field goal kickoff once a few years ago. I'm expecting something like that.
No, that reminds me of that gross overtime game. That overtime game in Phoenix on Thursday Night Football, 6-6 tie. Nobody wanted to win. The Cardinals absolutely dominated that game, but neither team wanted to win. Their kickers kept missing kicks. It was gross. But I see things going differently. I think the Cardinals will have the lead at halftime. I see it being 13-10 at halftime. The Cardinals have started well. They've been getting out good starts. And so I think they go into half with a 13-10 lead, but I think it's going to fall apart as it has every week except against the Cowboys. And even then, it almost fell apart. So I think that Seattle goes off in the second half, scores three touchdowns in the second half, and then roll with the 31-20 win. The talent, we see the talent that Seattle has, and the fact of the matter is that the Cardinals have been the get-well team this year. For a lot of teams, the Giants looked good. Like, they scored 31 points in the second half against the Cardinals. I don't know if they scored 31 points the rest of the season. The Bengals were awful offensively for 4 weeks, and then last week as well, and they absolutely went off against the Cardinals. And so I totally see this going away, that the Seahawks pull away, especially because the Cardinals absolutely they could do nothing in the running game. The Rams, they ran three times for 5 yards in the first half. And then on their first possession of the second half, they ran the ball nine straight times and went down the field and scored a touchdown. Kyren Williams had over 150 yards in the second half. And so I expect Ken Walker to do well. I expect Tyler Lockett to do well. And it'll be, I think this is the week when Seattle gets well. And it's understandable because the Cardinals are just so thin. Even with Buda Baker probably coming back, they can't sustain what they've been doing, and honestly, Josh Dobbs isn't good enough to play at the ceiling level that he has. So I have the Cardinals losing 31-20, and my betting strategy is I have them on the money line in the first half, and if I win that bet, I'm going to ride that, because if they're leading at the half, then I'll get a nice low. Okay, it won't be plus odds, but it'll be low minus odds on Seattle money line, and I'll go ahead and hit that and win twice in the game. That's what I'm thinking.
There you go.
So, Tim, I appreciate your time. That's Tim Weaver from the Seahawks Wire. You can find his work there, yes, at SeahawksWire.USAtoday.com. Tim, how can, like, if my Cardinals fans out here want to follow you on Twitter, are you on, I can't remember if you're on social media or not.
I'm not on social media, but the web page, the
Seahawks Wire, Twitter. Guys. Seahawks Wire.
I don't call it X. Call it Twitter. We're still on
it's
Twitter.
Not, it's Twitter. Come on. What is Elon thinking? No one's going to call it X. No one. Anyway, this is episode 476. Tim, I thank you so much for your time. This show, like, hopefully it's a good game at least. We will probably, yeah, if I can, get Tim back on later in the season when they meet again later in the season. That's Tim Weaver. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise of the Beard podcast. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Rise up!